Hello, Moonwalkers, and welcome to another episode of Moonwalk Talks.
Watch.
Another episode of Moonwalk Talks, the podcast that searches out the facts, stories, and theories about the king of pop, the greatest entertainer to ever moonwalk this earth, Michael Jackson. I am your host, Jenkins, the JonTron of Michael Jackson podcasting. If only I could get to Logan Paul status. And that's a reference so inside that only a select few will even get it. Please follow at Moonwalk Talks on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to Moonwalk Talks on YouTube. And please don't forget to tell a friend, or 7, or 15, about Moonwalk Talks. This episode of Moonwalk Talks is brought to you by... Hold on. Let me find my notes real quick. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm now legally obligated to read this. Okay. This episode is brought to you by... Sony Entertainment. Sony, the greatest media company in the world, bringing you the best in entertainment from the immersive video game console, the PlayStation 4, to cutting-edge home theater options with stunning visuals and sound via Blu-ray. And not to forget, Sony Music Incorporated, the number one Michael Jackson music service in the world, thanks to the recent releases of the albums the entire MJ fan community has been begging for. No, not anniversary releases or unreleased material. Sony knows what you really want. More compilation albums and more remix albums. Okay. Jeez. And now Moonwalk Talks listeners can get 50% off any Sony-branded posthumous Michael Jackson releases by entering in the code... Oh, dear God. You gotta be kidding me. By entering in the code John Branca is the real king of pop at checkout. That's right. Enter John Branca is the real king of pop at checkout for 50% off all posthumous Michael Jackson releases. Including the greatest Michael Jackson album of all time. Michael. Oh, God. Featuring 100% vocals from MJ. That's right, MJ. We're not saying what... Sony's not saying what MJ stands for. It could stand for anything. So, yes, Sony guarantees 100% MJ vocals. Sony listens to all the Michael Jackson fans' feedback, and they know you are upset about all the remixes and Michael Jackson vocal problems. So now, you can pre-order the newest Michael Jackson mashup album, where they remove Michael Jackson's vocals completely. Yes, that's correct. No impersonators. In fact, no Michael Jackson vocals at all. They take your favorite Michael Jackson songs and replace them with the trending artists of today. Who's ready for Cardi B's Bodak Bad? Hello, you can fuck with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the store, I can get them both. I don't want the tools, and I'm quick cutting it all, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money move. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. And here comes everybody's favorite tune, redone for the youth of today, Migos, Bougie Thriller. Smoking, no cooking, the hot pot. Cooking, know your bitch, yeah, dot, dot, dot. Cooking up dope in the pot pot. We came from nothing to something. Hey, I don't trust nobody, grip the trigger. Nobody call up the gang and they come and get janked. Cry me a river, give you a tissue. Bad and bougie, bad. Cooking up dope with a oozing. My niggas a savage, ruthless. We got 30s and 100 rounds too. My bitch is bad and bougie, bad. Go to MichaelJackson.com to pre-order the new Michael Jackson-ish album for three payments of $29.99. Legally, we have to say it's a good MJ album. Get it, or do I really have to read this part? Oh God. Buy it now, or Sony will assume you are not a, quote, real MJ fan. So yes, thanks to Sony for sponsoring this episode. Sony, we don't care if you old fans don't like it, because the kids will buy it anyway. There goes my soul. Now that the sponsors are out of the way, let's talk some moonwalk. On this episode of Moonwalk Talks, we are going to get down to the facts about Michael Jackson's involvement with The Simpsons. For years, people have speculated and rumored about Michael Jackson's mysterious appearance on the popular cartoon. Well, after reading various articles and contracts, listening to and watching multiple interviews all about this subject, I'm pretty sure I have a complete rundown of the truth behind Michael Jackson's real work with The Simpsons. For those that don't know, The Simpsons is an American cartoon based around a dysfunctional family consisting of Homer, the dolt of a husband and dad, Marge, the sweet wife and mom, Bart, the bad-behaved eldest son, Lisa, the brainy middle daughter, and Maggie, the quirky baby. The Simpsons is one of the longest-running animated sitcoms of all time. Its edgy programming and off-color humor led the way for countless other animated comedy sitcoms in the same vein, like Family Guy. Since the 1980s, it has grown to become a cultural phenomenon, spawning video games, comics, toys, motion pictures, albums. I mean, pretty much anything you can put a brand on, Simpsons did it. The Simpsons is held as one of the greatest and most influential TV shows ever created, and is a staple of American media. And while some claim its more recent content isn't as impressive as it used to be, it is still capturing audiences well into its 30th season. Yeah, some people claim that since the late 1990s, The Simpsons hasn't been as entertaining, especially since its major boom in the early 1990s when Simpson mania was at its peak. I remember being a kid in the 90s. I mean, everybody watched The Simpsons, and every kid loved The Simpsons. In particular, Bart Simpson, the foul-mouthed skateboarding delinquent. Every kid my age wanted to be Bart or wanted to be a Ninja Turtle. He was the epitome of cool. In the peak of Simpsons popularity, a character claiming to be Michael Jackson appeared in a 1991 episode titled Stark Raving Dad. A large in stature, overweight, balding, older man in a mental institution, he makes friends with Homer who, through a series of events, ended up in the institution because of his pink shirt. After disappointing the entire town of Springfield, who was coaxed by Bart into believing the real Michael Jackson was coming to Springfield, he comes to stay with the Simpsons, eventually makes friends with Bart, and helps him write a song for his sister Lisa's birthday, before revealing that he knows that he is not Michael Jackson. In fact, his name is Leon Kompowski, a bricklayer from New Jersey who just started talking and singing like the pop star because it made everyone around him happier. As far as Simpsons episodes go, Stark Raving Dad is actually quite a good episode. Instead of having Michael appear in a campy cameo, as some of the more recent celebrity cameos tend to do, they bring him in as a unique character and let the actual Michael Jackson live as a celebrity inside the Simpsons universe. The story arc is interesting and endearing, the gags land, and all of the references to Michael Jackson and his career are actually hilarious. They even respectably poke fun at Michael during the episode. It's neat to see Michael able to have a sense of humor about himself and his career every once in a while. I won't explain the episode too much. Just go give it a watch. You can find it on the Simpsons Season 3 DVD for around $5 at most stores, or online through different services such as FX and Hulu. Michael Jackson has actually been referenced a few different times in The Simpsons. They've made a couple of off-color jokes at his expense that I don't care to repeat, as well as mentioning on an episode how he bought the Beatles catalog. And lest we not forget the end of the official Black or White music video, where Bart is jumping up and down on the couch after watching the Panther segment wearing a Michael Jackson t-shirt. There are more than a few collaborations between Michael Jackson and The Simpsons. Now, the reason people were skeptical about Michael Jackson's role in the episode was because, for one, there were no credits with Michael Jackson's name. Instead, a pseudonym of John J. Smith took the place for the special guest voice. And two, the singing voice of Michael Jackson seemed a bit off base. For those dedicated MJ fans, it didn't quite sound like MJ. So for years, people speculated about Michael Jackson's appearance in the episode. Was it really his voice, or did they hire an actor that sounded like Michael Jackson? If so, what prevented him from doing certain performances in the episode? Some claim that Michael Jackson wasn't paid enough to actually do the singing in the episode. Another claim is that Michael Jackson just wanted to play a trick on his brothers. But I'm here to tell you the undeniable truth. Michael Jackson was on the episode Stark Raving Dad, and he did all of his own scripted speaking lines, but he did not do any singing on the episode. All the singing parts were done by a singer, musician, and voice actor named Kip Lennon. And it all comes down to bad contracts. I'm sure most of you MJ fans already knew this, but I'm going to go through all the evidence that proves this once and for all. As the story goes, it is believed that Michael Jackson, who was a fan of the show, actually got a hold of the creators of The Simpsons and said that he would like to write a number one song for Bart Simpson, which we will talk about later. And they also discussed him making a guest appearance on the show.
At the time, given everything, this was the biggest guest star in the show's history?
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What I remember was Michael Jackson had said he wanted to do the show. So Jim
he called up. First of all, you got to realize that you actually have Michael Jackson on the phone.
I mean, I was working in the office by myself late one night, and the phone rang. Hi, it's Michael Jackson. And I thought, I couldn't believe it. And really, it was a back and forth for about a minute before I finally believed that it was actually Michael Jackson.
Okay, okay. And I think at the same time, he called me and he said, I love Bart. I want to give Bart a number one single. He actually said, this was a sentence, I love Bart and I want to give him a number one single. And then we all laughed, we didn't know what to say, and he literally did. He wrote a song and it was number one.
And what I remember is, I think, Jim, you had the idea that it would be a fat white guy who thought he was Michael Jackson and he would do the voice for it.
No, we were all afraid that he wouldn't do the show. Because, you know, how do you use Michael Jackson in a cartoon show? And that was a pretty audacious idea, but he loved it.
I remember the two notes that he had on the script were that he wanted a scene where he stayed up writing a song with Bart, and we had a joke about Prince, and he said change Prince to Elvis. He didn't want to refer to Prince in the show. And what I do remember is we had written this thing, and again, I think it was the biggest guest star to that point, and we were going to have a reading at Michael Jackson's manager's house, which couldn't have been more nerve-wracking. We had the whole cast there, and it was late on a Tuesday night or something, and we were all sitting there, and Dan was late. And I think it was like 20 minutes or something.
Half hour late.
Like stuck in traffic.
Was like somebody had drawn Michael Jackson's manager's house, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was just so.
He had butlers and turbans, I think. And it was very.
The deal was also that he would not sing the Michael Jackson part, that we would take a sound alike
for the
singing, because that would be a joke on his brothers, I think, was his reason.
Yeah,
although I did, when we went to the recording studio, I did hear versions of the songs that he did in the show. Himself. Well, and there was always a rumor that he actually substituted at the last minute his real voice for the sound-alike voice, although...
But I tried to track down that rumor. I asked our music editor, Chris Ledesma, and he said he had a chain of custody on the tape from the imitator, Kip Lennon, and that's what went in the show.
So he swears it was?
He swears that
I say
Kip
we call Michael now.
And but he also held up that big fat
He's
wallet
else
with
on
$1,000 in it, so who knows?
No, there's so much cloak and dagger in this... Then he did do the speaking parts, and he wanted you, Jim, to direct. which I do remember the audio for that. But what was really funny, too, was we heard him sing the songs at the first reading. At that time, we did a second reading before we recorded it. The impersonator was there at the second reading, and Michael couldn't have been more amused by hearing this guy sing.
By the way, it was like an exciting session. It was surreal that whole day.
Yeah,
because it was a guy you never thought you'd see in real
life.
First
is like Michael Jackson, and there's a guy, I don't know why he's there, and Michael reads his line, and then all of a sudden, Michael's voice comes out of this, you know, little white guy.
And it was letterproof. Yeah. I mean, the guy sounded just like he had two days earlier. It was amazing. Yeah. It was a very, you know, off the wall, no pun intended.
I thought it was more of a thriller.
Surprised at every step of the process, like that he just said, oh, that's great. He only had minimal notes. He came in, he did it. He was nice. He wrote the song that was great. Yeah, no, I mean, it was all just a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah. It was really quite, you know, big deal because the show was just recently, you know, really this popular show. And then suddenly, you know, Michael Jackson calls us up. It was amazing.
So what's the story with Michael Jackson not singing his parts in the Simpsons episode? Well, it's really not that much of a mystery anymore. Almost every news outlet has covered it since Michael Jackson's death. TMZ even thought they broke the story when they talked to Yearly Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson. Spoiler alert, they didn't. It has been known for some time now. And it all comes down to contracts.
But Michael, he reads the script, a lot of Michael Jackson laughs, and he sings. I'm sitting right next to him. He sings Thriller, he sings Ben.
Wow.
Okay, so we get to the recording. It's time for him to do the singing, and he motions, and this little white guy comes in, this tiny guy.
His name is Kip Lennon.
Kip Lennon, the brother of the Lennon sisters. I'm sure your audience loves the Lennon sisters.
Oh, yeah, who doesn't?
And that was it. And this guy is Michael's authorized sound-alike. He did all the singing
so
in that episode.
He brought a sound-alike.
On the show, that's who does the singing for Michael Jackson.
It's Kip Lennon. Yeah.
Kip Lennon.
Why?
Kip, if you listen
do we
to
know
it,
why?
He said, I was a joke on my brothers. That's what he said.
Then we also, there was speculated that he had a contract with CBS Records that was kind of iffy, and that
he mention Walter Yetnikoff.
Because he also didn't go by Michael Jackson in the show, right? He had a nom de plume.
John J.A.Y.
Yeah, so
Smith.
It wasn't clear as to why he wasn't doing it, but it was clear that it was very weird.
He wrote the song, too.
Yes.
He didn't sing it.
Maybe he was a little eccentric.
So, yes, Michael Jackson did his speaking vocals on The Simpsons, and Kip Lennon did his singing vocals.
I can't believe you never heard of me. I'm a very popular entertainer.
Oh, of course I've heard of you. I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock not to know. What'd you say your name was?
Michael Jackson.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Well, have you heard of MTV?
Nope.
Motown?
No.
Beat It?
You Beat It.
Thriller?
What was that last one?
Thriller.
Nope.
Well, how about this?
Billie Jean is not my lover. She's just the girl who says that I am the one. But the kid is not my son.
Wow. How do you do that thing with your feet?
The moonwalk?
No, that thing with your feet.
Here, look. Just raise your heel a bit and put a little pressure on the ball of your foot.
Don't!
You seem like a nice guy. Why'd they put you in here?
Because I wore a pink shirt.
I understand. People thought I was crazy for the way I dressed.
What'd you wear?
One white glove covered with rhinestones.
So, who is Kip Lennon? Christopher Lennon, a.k.a. Kip Lennon, is a longtime session singer from California. He has been in the business for over 40 years and comes from a family full of professional singers and musicians. He started in 1977 in a band called Venice, named after the city he was born in, and still tours all over the world to this day. In the 80s, he was introduced to session singing and has been a working session singer and musician ever since. So, what does session singer even mean? Well, basically a session singer or a musician is a person that is hired to do one-off, professional work on a project. For instance, whenever a commercial needs a jingle or a popular musician needs some background vocals done, they hire a session singer. Same goes with musicians. Say you're in a band working on an album and your drummer comes down with the flu or something, you hire a session drummer for the period until your original drummer gets better. Session singers and musicians are much-needed, non-permanent members of the creative process. Take the Bad Tour, for example. Michael Jackson isn't a band. He is a solo artist. So every single one of his tours, he would use session musicians. Sheryl Crow was a session singer. Greg Fillinganes is a session piano player, etc., etc. Even doing albums, Michael would get different session musicians and writers to help with the creative process. Teddy Riley was a session musician and producer, as was Quincy Jones. If you look back, the only permanent member of the Michael Jackson creative process was Michael Jackson. And in that, you can see why some people don't agree with posthumous remix and reproduced releases. Because how are you going to make a Michael Jackson album without Michael Jackson? But as always, that's a topic for another episode.
What's wrong, Homer?
This place is so strange, Mike. I'm ashamed to admit it to another guy, but I'm scared.
We all get scared once in a while. Maybe I can help you.
Homer, the two of us need look no more. We both found what we were looking for. With a friend to call my own, I'll never be alone. And you, my friend, will see you've got a friend in me.
And funny enough, that wasn't the first time that Kip Lennon had sang as Michael Jackson. Check this out. That was from the 1988 Flintstone Kids' Just Say No special. And that was the famous pop star Michael Jack Stone singing a drug-free version of Beat It. That's right. 2 years before impersonating Michael Jackson on The Simpsons, Kip Lennon was impersonating him on another cartoon. On the Flintstone Kids special, the kids are trying to earn money to go see their favorite singer, Michael Jack Stone.
Yeah, look at this.
Michael Jack Stone in concert?
Coming here to Bedrock?
Oh, thank you.
His concert's gonna be right after the Riddle Rally. This is the coolest. This is fantastical. This is expensive. We'd better figure out a way to earn some money and fast.
But along the way, a kid named Stoney tries to get them to smoke some of that stuff, you know, that stuff the 80s and 90s told us was so terrible and would completely ruin your life. Oh yes, the deadliest drug of all time, marijuana. And yes, you hear me right, the antagonist's name was Stoney. So not only is it a reference to being stoned, it's also, you know, fitting into the whole Flintstones rock puns. Ha ha, pun intended. Eventually, the kids come to the decision that they are gonna just say no to drugs, and in the end, their drug-free lifestyle helps them through a riddle race and on to win some tickets to the Michael Jack Stone concert. And here is where a rewritten version of Beat It is performed. But as you can probably tell, it's not Michael Jackson's vocals at all. It's actually the voice of Kip Lennon. Funny though, they must have wanted to keep it a secret because Kip Lennon's name is nowhere featured on the credits to the show. Instead, they give a big special thanks to Michael Jackson for letting them use the recording to Beat It. One more interesting tidbit about the Flintstone Kids special is that the episode was actually built around the Just Say No campaign and LaToya Jackson's song of the same name from her 1988 album LaToya. And it even features her song in the cartoon during a montage. And even though LaToya granted permission of her original track with original vocals intact, and Michael gave them an impersonator, there was a special thank you to Michael Jackson, and Michael's name was still much larger than LaToya's in the credits. Once again, the Jackson siblings get second prize. Just make a
a loving place to be. So beat it, send it running away. Don't need it.
Say no.
Don't need it.
Say no.
Just say no to drugs. To beat it.
And not to mention, the exact same year, Michael Jackson was turned into a singing raisin. That's right, Michael Raisin from the California Raisins. The California Raisins were a marketing campaign to help raise the consumption of raisins that, strangely enough, turned into a popular franchise. They were claymation singing and dancing raisins that were known for covering the Marvin Gaye song, I Heard It Through the Grapevine. They were pretty popular from the late 80s to the early 90s, and when Michael Jackson saw one of the commercials featuring a raisin version of Ray Charles, he wanted to get in on the action too. And the story on how Michael Jackson got involved with the California Raisins is very similar to his story with The Simpsons. He calls up the creator and animator of the California Raisins, Will Vinton, and they chat about Michael Jackson becoming a California Raisin. Will Vinton is known to be one of the fathers of claymation and actually worked with Michael Jackson on all the claymation on 1986 Captain EO, as well as being the director and animator of the Speed Demon segment on the 1988 Moonwalker movie. So the two had some prior work history. Michael Jackson even did the commercial free of charge as long as he could be involved with the creative process. There's actually a really funny video you can watch on YouTube where Michael Jackson is giving his ideas on how the California Raisins should act. You should really go check it out. It's pretty cool. So in 1988, the same year as the Flintstone Kids special, a commercial featuring a Michael Jackson raisin caricature was singing an altered version of Bad that was remixed with I Heard It Through the Grapevine. And once again, an impersonator was used to do the singing parts. And it's only at the end of the commercial that you hear Michael Jackson's actual voice, once he wakes up from a dream in claymation form.
Wow, must have been something I ate.
And can you guess who the impersonator is? Well, I had the hardest time trying to figure out who sang the vocals for the California Raisins commercial because the singer is not credited anywhere. But once again, it was Kip Lennon. So, what does this all have to do with The Simpsons? Well, because of this is where I start to believe the validity of the contract claims. Once again, we have a case where Michael wants to be part of a series, he does his own spoken dialogue, but not his own singing. And to put the cherry on top of this evidence sundae, in 1997, only 6 years after the Simpsons episode, Michael Jackson voiced another character on a relatively unknown kids' cartoon series called The Lionhearts. The Lionhearts was a short-lived children's cartoon that was based around the MGM lion and his family. Michael Jackson appeared in a couple episodes and was clearly credited under special guest appearance as Michael Jackson for all the episodes he was featured in. So how was it that no contract stopped him from using his real name as the cartoon voice in the Lionhearts? Sony didn't own MGM at the time, and this series premiered while Michael was still under the Sony contract. Well, the difference here is that he didn't actually do much of a voice at all. From what I can tell, all he did was voice a bug in a fedora, and all the bug does is this. Yep, no spoken dialogue, no singing, just noises. So once again, even though he used his real name, by not singing on another person's property, he would still be adhering to the contract's terms. I reached out to a bunch of different people who worked on the Lionheart to see if any of them had any info about Michael Jackson's involvement with the series, and I only heard back from one person, Perry Gilpin from Frasier fame. And all she said was that she would, quote, see what she could say about it publicly. And, well, I never heard back from her. So either she didn't know much about it, or legally and contractually, she couldn't talk about it. I like to believe it's the latter. And finally, there is the song Happy Birthday, Lisa.
And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four.
Lisa, it's your birthday. God bless you this day. You gave me the gift of a little sister, and I'm proud of you today. Lisa, it's your birthday. Happy birthday, Lisa. Lisa, it's your birthday. Happy birthday, Lisa. I wish you
happy birthday, Lisa. A song which Michael Jackson wrote specifically for the episode, has full writing credit on, but still didn't sing in the episode. Instead, it was sung by Kip Lennon. And when The Simpsons released the album Songs in the Key of Springfield years later in 1997, can you guess which version of Happy Birthday Lisa made it onto the album? Nope, not the Michael Jackson version. It was Kip Lennon's vocals. And even further, although it had been openly admitted by Michael Jackson and all the creators and people involved that Michael Jackson wrote those songs, they still weren't legally allowed to put Michael Jackson's name in the credits. So instead, the song is credited to W.A. Mozart, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And Songs in the Key of Springfield was released under Rhino Records, which is a subsidiary of Warner Brothers, not Sony. So, yes, once again, contracts prevented the release of Michael Jackson's vocals on a Simpson product. Actually, the Michael Jackson version of Happy Birthday Lisa was never released officially, but is now available thanks to the power of the internet.
Lisa, it's your birthday. God bless you this day.
Without having access to Michael Jackson's contracts from the 80s and 90s, if I had to make an educated guess, it wasn't because of money, it was never a joke on his brothers. The truth was that somewhere in his contract, there were clauses that prevented him from pursuing some forms of artistic freedom.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Is this Mr. Lennon? So this is Jenkins with the Michael Jackson podcast.
Oh, yeah. How are you? I'm sorry. I didn't recognize the number. And
I actually got in touch with Kip Lennon about his experience working with Michael Jackson on The Simpsons. And although he has told this story before, he was kind enough to go down memory lane with me once again.
It all sort of, it's a long story, but I sort of grew up doing imitations my whole life. Not like I'm going to grow up and be one of those, you know, impersonator people, but it was just fun. I come from a huge family, and everybody's really funny, and everybody's really musical, so it was just a natural extension to, you know, every one of my brothers and sisters can imitate somebody, you know, and I used to imitate lots of people. It wasn't like I was this guy who wanted everyone to think I was a Michael Jackson impersonator, really. You know, I didn't even know I could do it until I started doing a lot of sound-alikes in the early 80s. There were TV shows like Magnum P.I. and there was just so many shows. And they used to hire people like me to sing to imitate the songs that were in the top 40 at the time, you know, that were classic rock songs or that were on the radio. And they would put them on the jukebox in the background of a bar scene or in the car radio while they're having a scene in the car. It was kind of a trend back then. So I was on about 9 or 10 primetime shows a season, just doing all this kind of satellite stuff. And Michael Jackson was one of the things I used to do, you know, just for fun. I would do, you know, a minute or so of a different Michael Jackson song. But I also did lots of other people, Billy Joel and Mick Jagger and Sting and, you know, whoever was on the radio at the time. So when I was working for The Simpsons, I had already done a few things for them when they called and said that Michael Jackson was recommending me. And it was as funny to them as it was to me because they already knew me. We were all friends. I'd already worked on the show. And suddenly they said, Michael Jackson says he wants you to do him on for this episode of The Simpsons. And the truth is, I'm not sure exactly how it all happened, but I think that the Flintstones thing happened first. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Flintstones was in 1988, and then the Simpsons episode was in 1990.
Yeah. So I was doing these sound-alikes, and there was a DJ in L.A. named Rick Dees, and we got hired to do a whole package for him of promo stuff. So we would imitate whatever was on the radio at the time and do, you know, a little bit of a famous song. So I did The Way You Make Me Feel, but it was, you know, Ritties or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And I did Michael Jackson, and he heard it. And so then his people reached out to me for the Flintstones thing. I think it was the Flintstones thing. Maybe it was heard it through the grapevine, you know, the California Raisins thing. I also did the voice on that one.
You did that one as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is amazing. Like, I've been researching that for, like, the last week, and I've tried to get hold of Will Vinson to no avail, and because I knew for a fact that it wasn't Michael Jackson, but I had no clue, but I was like, oh, man, I was going to ask you that if that was you. That is amazing.
Yeah, and that was really trippy, too. So I'm not sure whether that was before or after the Flintstones. I think it's after Flintstones, but
yeah, it was after.
Okay, and what's funny about that gig was that, you know, their camera crew was there filming my mouth because they have to animate to a mouth. You know, they have to see an actual human mouth in order to make the clay work right and all that. And so what's funny is they've got all the Michael Jackson's everything else on there, all his costumes and his outfits and everything. But when I'm doing the singing as the raisin, it's my mouth that's on this little raisin.
That is amazing. Yeah. I'm going to have to contact these people and make sure you get credit for this because it's like I couldn't find it on like the IMDb or anything. So, yeah, we'll have to fix that. But that's so awesome. That's so cool to hear.
For me, I'm a session singer. You know, I'm a gun for hire. And so, you know, getting credit for that kind of stuff, you know I did it. My kids know. My family knows. You know, that stuff doesn't really matter that much to getting the credit as much as it is. It's a lot of fun to do these kinds of things. You know, one time I used to sing on a TV show called Solid Gold back in the day, and they always had special guests every week. And Boy George was on doing a duet with Dionne Warwick. And for the life of him, he just couldn't sing this one harmony part. He was a lead vocalist who didn't really understand how harmonies worked. And I was there, and he knew that I could imitate him. And so I ended up singing all the choruses with Dionne Warwick on the pre-record, and nobody ever knew. He went on national television, and he mouthed my vocals when it
was
the chorus, and we all had a big laugh, and, you know, it's fun, and, you know, it's a fun thing.
Wow, that's really awesome.
Yeah. So it was the same goes for the Michael Jackson stuff. I still don't think I sound just like him. I sound like a parody of Michael Jackson, but he got a kick out of that, you know. And I captured enough of his caricatures that it worked perfectly for cartoons and a raisin and, you know, that kind of thing. So by the time they called me for the Simpsons, I had already done the raisin commercial and the Flintstones.
That is phenomenal. You know, I do have to say, you do sound very similar to Michael Jackson. To, you know, a lot of people who probably don't listen to Michael on an everyday basis would still believe to this day that it was, you know, that it might have actually been Michael on that. Because I was actually listening to the commentary on The Simpsons, and some of them that work for The Simpsons still believe that Michael might have done. So,
no, he didn't. That whole story, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it anywhere else, I mean,
oh yeah, I've researched it up and down.
it really was really trippy because I still hadn't met him. I'd already done all these projects for him, but I hadn't met him. And you know, normally when I work on The Simpsons, it's all post-production, but this is pre-production. So that means, you know, I had never met the cast. I'd worked on the show for a couple of years by then, and I'd never met anybody on the show. You know, musicians tend to just do everything post animation. So, so to go to a table read like that and have the whole cast there and have Jim Brooks there, you know, the director directing the episode, and Matt Groening and everybody, I was just as excited to meet all of them as I was to meet Michael Jackson. I mean, Michael Jackson was always like an idol of mine when I was a kid because he's a couple years older than me. He's probably about 4 years older than me, something like that. And so, I mean, literally the first few times I was ever even singing out loud by myself in my house at the top of my lungs, it was always doing Never Can Say Goodbye and stuff like that. Cause we had the same range, and, you know, I really, really admired him when he was, you know, in the Jackson 5. So I was excited to meet him. And, of course, you know, everybody knew the Thriller album, and I actually prefer the Off the Wall album to all of his other albums. I just think it's amazing. But so I was excited to meet him, but I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, nobody was allowed to have any cameras there, no filming, no autographs, nothing like that. And by the time he arrived, we were all sitting at the table ready to go, and I still hadn't met him. And then Jim Brooks said, okay, everybody, let's start. And Michael comes in, and he didn't have an entourage, just him by himself with a glove and a hat. And, you know, it was like, it was literally like Thomas Jefferson walking into the room or Mickey Mouse or something, you know. It was just
wow.
Like, it was so iconic that, you know, because he was right at the peak of his Michael Jackson-ness. You know, it's not like meeting some classic rock artist who used to be, you know, whoever, you know.
Yeah.
This is him at his absolute peak of popularity. So it was very iconic and sort of, it was really strange. It was a heightened reality for a little while there. So he sits down across from me, and we start doing the run-through, and it's, you know, it's a really funny script and whatever, and it gets to the point, I think the first time I sing is when he says, you know, to Homer in prison, he says, you know, if you don't think I'm Michael Jackson, well, listen to this, you know, and then I have to do, I think it was Billie Jean, I think it was Billie Jean. And I literally, you know, it's one thing to be in the studio with effects on your voice and music and all that, but to just a cappella imitate somebody who's sitting across from you in a room full of strangers, you know, I've never even met the cast, and literally everybody turns. You could hear everyone shifting in their seats, turning and looking at this dude, like, okay, let's see what you got, you know. It was really strange. I mean, luckily, I was a veteran by then of a million sessions, and so this was just one session of a million, you know. So it wasn't like I was thinking, oh, my God, my whole career depends on this. And I knew I could do enough of an imitation that it would get a laugh, you know. It's more about it being funny. It's like drawing a cartoon of someone. You want to capture the extremities, you know, so that people, you know, get the flavor of that person, you know. So I started singing, and I sang whatever it was, and everybody burst into applause. Everybody's laughing, and he's smiling, and I mean, I still hadn't even shaken his hand. It was the weirdest thing. And he's sitting right across the table from me. So then we do the whole thing, and then by then I did Band, and I did. We didn't do Happy Birthday Lisa because he had just gotten me the tape of that, which is also weird to get a cassette from Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
That, you know, that nobody's going to hear except me. And now it's on the internet, you know, but at the time I wasn't supposed to play it for anyone. It was just so I could learn the song he wrote, you know, Happy Birthday Lisa. And so then we did then we took a break, and that was really strange too because everybody was buzzing and stuff, but they're really giving him his space because, you know, everybody knew it would be uncomfortable if they're all flocking around him, and everyone's just being professional. So we're taking a break before the actual recording, and people are eating bagels and playing ping pong, and, you know, and he's just standing in the corner almost like, he was so shy that it looked like, come on, is anyone this shy in the whole world? Like, he's looking down, he's holding one arm, holding his elbow with one hand, with his other hand, and looking down at his shoes, you know, like with a hunched over back, like not talking to anyone. So I went over and I introduced myself finally, and you know, he knows one of my sisters, and he knows my brother-in-law, and I knew everybody in his band, all of his singers and stuff, and I'd already done him on so many projects, but I figured he'd kind of be comfortable.
Uh-huh.
So, kind of small talked a little bit, and he was very warm, he was very nice. You'd never say he was a jerk. It seemed like that's almost like his safety system is to just sort of wall up around himself, you know, and isolate himself a little bit, you know, which was a shame because he was around a bunch of people that were giving him a lot of space, you know.
Yeah.
And so then we started the actual show recording, and he and I were right next to each other in one booth. There's all the different characters. And it was really interesting to watch him. He would get the kick out of doing his dialogue and then getting big laughs in the room and everything. And then I did Ben, and I did, you know, Billie Jean and all that stuff. And but he was so shy and so quiet that by the time we were getting to the end of it, like, James Brooks was saying things to me like, okay, we need Michael to do, like, a little loop or a little something. Do you think you could, Chip, what would Michael do? So he's asking me, what would Michael do? And Michael's standing right next to me. And it was so strange. So then I did a hee-hee or whatever I did. I don't know. And everybody laughed and cheers. And then, so help me, Michael actually says, yeah, that's what I would do. It was so strange. The whole thing was very strange. And then he was suddenly, you know, saying goodbye, and he was gone. And the truth is, I don't even know. I mean, 25 years later, we did the Hollywood Bowl, three nights at the Hollywood Bowl to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Simpsons. And so I went, and I did Happy Birthday, Lisa, and I don't know, maybe you've seen those videos. And even the cast and the producers and the writers, and now the people that are working there now that weren't even born when we did that show, nobody really knows the reason. I never knew the real reason why he didn't sing. You know, there's so many theories, like you mentioned, you know. He was definitely an artist, so he didn't want to release anything with his voice on it that hadn't been, you know, combed over a million times and worked on and overdubbed and fixed. You know, it took him a long time to release things because he wanted them to be right. So I would think, as a recording artist, he wouldn't want to release anything that's just done on the fly like that. So, you know, with his reputation on the line. So
that's a good reason.
Yeah, and, you know, some people said it was contractual, and that's why his name wasn't on the credits. And some people said that he just thought the whole thing was funny, so he wanted to be cloak and dagger about it all. So we never, ever did find out the real reason. But it was really funny to do the 25th anniversary thing because there were so many young people that had been working on The Simpsons by then that they sort of considered that time the golden age, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to know the story I just told you. Because they weren't there, there's no recording of it, there's no photos, there's nothing. And it was really trippy. And it was trippy to walk out on stage at the Hollywood Bowl and have Yardley introduce the scene and then have Nancy and I walk out. People were so endeared. They loved that song so much, the Happy Birthday, Lisa, that you've got 17,000 people every night going, aww, you know, and then you can feel them go, huh? Like, because they see that I'm like this, you know, mid-50s white guy. <You know? laughs> and so that really gets this funny reaction. And then once I start singing, they're like, oh, that's the guy. You know, it's really, really, it was really a funny situation, but it was also, you can't lose. People love that so much, and you walk
around
and you're with Bart, and you're doing a duet, and there's teleprompters, and everybody is so happy that it was one of the easiest gigs I ever did.
That's an amazing story, and I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Kip Lennon for taking the time out to chat with me. He was honestly so helpful and kind. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with him. I really only expected to get to talk to him for a few minutes, and we ended up talking for almost half an hour about all kinds of things, including his involvement with the Jacksons and American Dream miniseries. So I will upload the full interview for you all to listen to. And one more thing. In 2017, Kip Lennon actually reprised his singing role as Leon Kompowski in a new episode of The Simpsons titled Mr. Lisa's Opus, where for the first time in over 25 years, they added a new verse to the song, Happy Birthday, Lisa. Another great mystery is Michael Jackson's involvement with the song Do the Bartman from the album The Simpsons Sing the Blues. The Simpsons Sing the Blues was released in December of 1990. It was a collection of original tracks not featured in the series. So instead of being a soundtrack, it was actually just a regular album released from fictional characters of the show, something that hadn't really been done much at the time. The album actually became so popular that it started a trend and other cartoons and sitcoms started releasing their own original albums. That's right, if it wasn't for The Simpsons Sing the Blues, we wouldn't have songs like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Pizza Power. Pizza Power, a flying saucer food delight. Pizza Power, all that's what makes us feel alright. Ugh, it's still just so bad. Time has not been kind to that music. I don't think it was good when it came out. Anyway, the first single from Sing the Blues was the track Do the Bartman, performed by Bart Simpson actress Nancy Cartwright. It reached number one in a dozen countries, and while it was never released as a single in the United States, it got plenty of radio play and hit the top 10 in the pop charts. The music video for Do the Bartman, that was actually directed by Pixar's Brad Bird before he was at Pixar, also garnered a nomination for Best Special Effects at the 1991 MTV Video Music Awards. All of this is pretty impressive for a rapping cartoon 10-year-old. But let's get to the real story. What part did Michael Jackson play in the conception of this song? Now, the only reason why people have questioned Michael Jackson's involvement with Do the Bartman is because for years, the sole writing and producing credits on the song were given to a person named Brian Loren, or Brian Loren Hudson. Brian Loren is a writer and producer from Philadelphia who has worked with artists such as Whitney Houston, Barry White, and Eric Benet. But more importantly to this story, he is credited for work on Michael Jackson's 1991 album Dangerous. So, while Brian Loren is credited for his work on the Simpsons track, Michael Jackson's name is nowhere on the notes or packaging for Do the Bartman, similar to his involvement with the episode he appeared on. And trust me, I double-checked. If any of you have listened to my last couple of episodes, I've become quite the expert on publishing and music royalties. So, I found out that Brian Loren is registered under BMI Music Publishing. And a quick search later, I found that Brian Loren has 13 registered titles. And in that list is Do the Bartman, and it credits him as the sole writer and producer on the song. No Michael Jackson to be found. The only other credit shows that it is connected to Sony Music as well. Yep, Sony Music now owns Do the Bartman. I hear you asking, well, since Loren is undoubtedly the only one credited, what makes you so sure that Michael Jackson actually did have a part in writing this song? Well, let me explain. For one, anybody that is familiar with Michael Jackson's work and hears Do the Bartman can totally hear a familiar 90s MJ sound, from the music production and sharp snares to the crisp hook harmonies. In fact, if you compare Do the Bartman with a couple of other Michael Jackson tracks side by side, you will notice the many similarities. First, let's listen to the beginning of Do the Bartman. Now, let's listen to Superfly Sister from the Blood on the Dance Floor album. And here is the unreleased track Work That Body from the Dangerous demos. Oh, All three of these songs have musical similarities, from the sliding bass to the bouncy snare-filled intros. They all share a similar rhythm, vocal work, sound, and drum patterns. Not only that, all three songs link Brian Loren and Michael Jackson in some way. Both Superfly Sister and Work That Body list both Brian Loren and Michael Jackson as the songwriters and composers on the BMI publishing database. So with just a listen, you can notice all three songs are unmistakably the work of both Michael Jackson and Brian Loren. But on to my second point, I bring Nancy Cartwright to the stand, the voice of Bart Simpson.
What about working with Michael Jackson? Because you worked with him directly, right?
Yeah.
To do the...
Yeah.
The Bartman.
The thing that I remember the most, though, is that later on, Michael produced Do the Bartman. So, and he was a huge Bart Simpson fan, just not just Simpsons, but Bart. He loved Bart. And I found this out, and I got the doll. I had another Kmart or somebody, I think it was, no, Toys R Us, was having a sale of these Bart dolls. Because, like I said, it was a prototype. So they decided with that short string, they weren't going to be making any more of these dolls. I think they were eventually going to make a Lisa doll and a Homer doll, and they were big. I still have mine upstairs. But it's like, anyway, I went and I saw they were on sale for like 10 bucks each. So I bought a bunch. Like, it filled up my garage with these talking Bart dolls. So I signed it and I brought it with me. And Jim Brooks was there. And then Michael came out and I had this doll behind my back. And I said, and he says, Michael, this is Nancy Cartwright. She's the voice of Bart. He's like, oh, I'm such a fan of Bart. Oh, so nice to meet you. And I said, yeah, I brought you a little something, Michael. I heard you like Bart. He goes, oh, he loved it. He just thought it was the sweetest thing. And I had signed it. And we went in the studio and he directed me, and that was really, really fun. We had he's so low key and so easygoing. And I remember, if you can do the Bart, you're bad like Michael Jackson. Just a little bit of a for Michael.
Cool. As she clearly states, Michael Jackson was in the studio directing her while she recorded the vocals for Do the Bartman. Even further, in her book, My Life as a 10-Year-Old Boy, released in 2000, she tells a similar story, adding that Michael came in specifically to direct her during the recording process, and how quick and smooth everything went because he was such a pro. He even helped her during the ad-lib sections and loved when she threw in the "Eat your heart out, Michael" part at the end. And let's just note that this book came out in the year 2000, when Michael was alive. Unlike some books and sources where Michael wasn't alive to dispute the claims, in this instance, he was alive and well, and still didn't feed the need to counteract any of the story. So yes, Michael did co-write Do the Bartman. Another question that has been debated was if Michael Jackson actually sang on the track at all, because, once again, he isn't credited. But after research and analysis, I'm saying without a doubt that Michael Jackson did do background vocals on Do the Bartman. At first, I was skeptical. For years listening to the track, it didn't really sound like Michael Jackson to me. But in doing my research, Michael Jackson's background vocals are really the only thing everybody can agree on. Every person that had some part in the creation of Do the Bartman have stated that Michael did lay vocals down. So while they can't agree on his writing participation, at least they all agree on that. But I had to hear it for myself. So I found the acapella for the song and listened to it way more than I wanted to. Not that it's a bad song, I just, you know, didn't want to hear it that many times. And, well, since I have a background in sound engineering, I was able to manipulate the track in multiple ways to bring out the vocals more. And in slowing down the tempo and listening to Michael's distinct speech, it convinced me that he in fact did the background vocals. I will say that he is probably really far back in the mix, but he's there. Take a listen. Here is the original track at regular speed. Everybody, if you can do the Bartman, shake your body, turn it out if you can.
Check it out, man. To the side, yes, you can. Everybody in the house, do the Bartman. Everybody, if you can do the Bartman, shake your body, turn it out if you can. To the side, yes, you can. Everybody in the house.
Now here is just the acapella vocals at regular speed.
Everybody, if you can do the Bartman, shake your body, turn it out if you can, man.
Get it out, man.
Front to back to the side, yes, you can.
Bartman.
Everybody in the house, do the Bartman.
Uh-huh.
Everybody, if you can do the Bartman, Shake your body, turn it out if you're bad, man.
Whoa,
got your back
mama.
To the scientist, you can. Whoa. Everybody in the house to the barn, man.
It wasn't long ago.
Now take a listen to just the vocals slowed down by almost 50%.
Everybody, if you can, do the barn, man.
Whoa.
Shake your body, turn it out if you're bad, man.
Shake it out,
run
man.
Your back to the scientist, you can.
Barn, man.
Everybody in the house to the barn, man.
Uh-huh.
Everybody, if you can, do the barn, man. Shake your body, turn it out if you're bad, man.
Whoa.
Front to back to
mama.
The scientist, you can.
Whoa.
Everybody in the house to the barn, man.
It wasn't long
With
ago.
The song slowed down, it's easier to pick Michael's voice out from Brian Lorenz's main vocals. But the part that really sold me was when I slowed down the phrase, do the Bartman. I'm going to play it a couple of times for you.
Do the Bartman. 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 Do the Bartman.
Now that is Michael Jackson's voice. Now, why am I even having to explain any of this? Well, because for years, Brian Lorenz claimed to be the sole writer for the song. Not only that, show producer James L. Brooks sent out a press release apologizing for any confusion, saying that Brian Lorenz was the only writer and producer on Do the Bartman, even though show creator Matt Groening has exclaimed the exact opposite, saying publicly that Michael Jackson was involved in the writing and producing process and that he is surprised that nobody found out about it. So you can see how throughout the years, this could have gotten a bit confusing. So to clear things up, while I do agree that Lorenz most likely did the bulk of the writing, hell, I believe he wrote the entire song, in reality, anybody that contributes to the composition of a song is to be given writing credit. So, sorry to tell you this, Brian, but any ad-libs or ideas that Nancy and Michael added to the song legally justify a writing credit. Also, Brian has gone on record saying that even though this whole controversy about Michael Jackson being a co-writer has been a, quote, thorn in his side, it was Michael Jackson's idea for the song to be called Do the Bartman and to add the bad like Michael Jackson line. So to finally close this door, Do the Bartman was written and produced by Brian Lorenz. It was co-written by Michael Jackson and Nancy Cartwright, and executive produced by Michael Jackson. So, if Michael Jackson actually did co-write the song, well, why isn't he given credit? My theory is that, for one, he didn't do the bulk of the work. Brian Lorenz did. If I had to make a guess, I would think it would go something like this. Michael Jackson and Brian Lorenz were probably working together on Demo Track for Dangerous. After talking with the Simpsons creators, Michael mentioned something to Lorenz about doing a song for the Simpsons and contracted the hungry and ambitious Lorenz to work on the track. So, Lorenz gets to work and comes up with the majority of the song. Now, Michael would probably pop in here and there and give his notes on the track. He'd give his ideas of what he thinks should be added or changed, as all producers do. He then throws in some background vocal harmonies and directs both Lorenz and Cartwright during the recording process. And then, eventually, bam, song done. He then takes a step back and lets Lorenz take all the credit. It's not like this is the first time Michael Jackson has produced and co-written music and not taken credit for it. Let's not even get into a certain other 90s franchise he worked on and didn't take credit for. Sonic 3. And also, who knows? What if the track would have flopped? It was quite a risk. Would Michael Jackson really want his name forever attached to a failed corny cartoon rap song? Just a theory. And not only that, he was under contract with Sony Music, and Do the Bartman was released under the rival record company Geffen. At this period, he was working on his upcoming album Dangerous, so it was probably not a good idea to release the first new music since Bad, which was 3 years prior, on a rival record company's album. And three, if his past endeavors give us any insight, I'm sure Michael Jackson enjoyed the idea of keeping the public guessing on his involvement on the song. In the end, it takes a team. And this time the team consisted of Brian Lorenz, Michael Jackson, and Nancy Cartwright. And they did exactly what Michael Jackson said he was going to do. they created a worldwide number one hit for Bart Simpson.
Everybody, if you can do the Batman, shake your body, turn it out if you can.
Kick it out, man.
To the side, as you can, can. Everybody in the house, do the Batman. Everybody, if you can do the Batman, shake your body, turn it out if you can. Whoa. Back to the side, as you can, can. Everybody in the house, do the Batman.
It wasn't long ago, just a couple of weeks. I got in trouble, yeah, pretty deep. Was yelling, Mom was too, because I put mothballs in the beef stew. Punishment time in the air lurks gloom, sitting by myself confined to my room. When all else fails, nothing else left to do, I turn on the music so I can feel the groove.
Move your body,
oh,
get,
I'm feeling the groove now, baby.
Front to back,
bring it back,
motion.
Whoa,
move your hips from side to side,
the
side
now.
Whoa, slip,
Lisa,
let your feet right now.
Ha!
If you got the groove, you gotta use it.
Bart, you're bad like Michael Jackson.
Everybody, if you can do the Batman,
bring it, baby.
Your body, turn it out, if you can.
Oh yeah, I'm bad.
Can,
real bad. Whoa, I'm bad.
Do the Batman,
watch his rhythm.
Yeah.
And to wrap things up, in 2015, the rights to do the Bartman sold in auction for over $38,000. Seems like a lot of money, but really, that was the cheapest number one MJ song ever sold. And that's it for another episode of Moonwalk Talks. One more interesting factoid that I wanted to add was that after the Michael Jackson episode, they actually approached Prince to join the show as the voice of Leon Kapowski as well. In this sequel story, Leon would come back to see The Simpsons, but would be pretending to sing and talk like Prince this time around instead of Michael Jackson. But due to some script mix-ups and complications, it never came to be, but I think it would have actually been a pretty neat concept. Thank you again for listening. I appreciate you spending your time with me. As always, I'm your host, Jenkins. Please go rate, review, and subscribe to Moonwalk Talks on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And please don't forget to follow at Moonwalk Talks on Twitter and Instagram. If you are listening and watching on YouTube, please click that subscribe button and give us a thumbs up. I would really appreciate it. And if you have any suggestions for a show topic, please send me an email to jenkins@jenkins.net. I mean, you could send me questions if you want to as well. Send me whatever you think you think whatever I need to see. And if you are enjoying the show, please go and tell a friend or two about it. Thanks again for giving me your time. And remember, no matter what happens today or tomorrow, keep your head up, keep the faith, and don't forget to smile.